All right, so you got to see the Mishnah, the beginning of Kol HaBasar, and let's launch right into that as a point of departure to try to understand what exactly is going on with a very mysterious din in the Torah. And this din in the Torah is one that is one of the most relevant mitzvahs that we have. And out of all the chukim, and we'll consider just to what extent this is a chok in a minute, but out of all the ritual mitzvos that we have in the Torah, I think it's fair to say that bas v'chalav is probably one of the most practically relevant mitzvos that we have. Because an observant Jew makes a decision at least once a day based on Hilchos Bas V'Chalav. This impacts your life pretty much more than almost any other ritual Yoredeya kind of mitzvah. Is that fair to say? It sounds pretty much the case. And to try to understand both halachically and hashkafically and from a lomdish perspective how all of the components of Bas V'Chalav come together is a very special opportunity that we have this month. So I want to try to give somewhat of an introduction to some of the issues, and we're going to try to put forward some questions, which I'm certainly not going to answer today. They're questions which are going to be relevant throughout this parak. We'll start to answer them a little bit today, but they're going to help guide us to try to understand the whole concept, the whole structure of the idea of the prohibition of Bas V'Chalav, and how does it fit into this Masechta, how does it fit into our whole halachic worldview and our whole hashgafic perspective. So first, let's just open with the premise that the topic that the Mishnah chooses has its own special significance. So what is the first din of Bas V'Chalav that we're taught? What does the Mishnah start off with? What's the first thing it teaches us about Bas V'Chalav? And if you think about it, it's actually quite economical because it throws in a couple of different considerations in very few words. Not a long Mishnah, and there are a bunch of dinim actually that are included. But even just the first line, what's the Mishnah trying to take up as a subject?
Bishul.
Sorry, okay. So first of all, Bishul as opposed to what?
Achila.
Okay, so maybe Bishul as opposed to Achila.
That's also a pasuk.
Right, okay. So already picking up a couple of interesting issues. Right, so that, first of all, what you're noting is that when we talk about Bas V'Chalav, all I've said so far is Bas V'Chalav, Bas V'Chalav, Bas V'Chalav, but we haven't used any verbs. Right? And what we might be aware of is that the prohibition related to milk and meat appears three times in the Torah. Right? Those are the first three makoros that you had. And in Parshas Mishpatim, and in Parshas Kisisa, and then Parshas Vehei. And the Talmud understands, if you got a chance to see this, and Rashi quotes it in Mishpatim, that there's actually three Yisurim. What are the three Yisurim? Not allowed to cook, not allowed to have Hana, and not allowed to eat. So, is it significant that for whatever reason, the Mishnah right away starts talking about Bishul? That's one question that we need to figure out. Does Bishul have a particular status among these three, sir? Now, Meir right away said it's Lashon HaPasuk. Right? That is itself interesting.
That might be a Svar al-Hepeh, because then we say like Chaviv, Nedarim,
uh-huh.
That Drushans are Chaviv.
Okay.
So we rather like.
So sometimes the Mishnah will take the opposite approach. And so, first of all, that itself is something we're going to have to figure out. That if the Torah wants to convey three Yisurim, why does it use the same word three times? And out of the three verbs we could have picked, why is Bishul the one that wins? So it's a topic that interests us from the Mishnah, and it's a topic that interests us from the Torah itself. Right? What exactly is the role of Bishul here? So this is already going to be a question that's going to jump out at us right away. That we have some kind of a three-part structure here. And what does Bishul do within this relationship? Maury, you had a hand up? And the Mishnah provokes it by focusing on Bishul. And the Torah provokes it by always using the word Bishul. And one could be the reason for the other. Maybe the Mishnah is just following the language of the Torah. Or maybe they're both tied into the same reason. Maybe Bishul has some particular significance, and that's why the Torah uses it. And maybe that's why the Mishnah also uses it. Okay, so that's one question that we're very much going to try to tackle at the beginning. What exactly is the relationship of Bishul to the other two components here? And the Mishnah is provoking that question. What other, and I hear, like you said, is very economical. The Mishnah with very few words is, no pun intended, throwing a couple things onto the table. So what else is the Mishnah bringing up as a subject here? Yeah, Maury?
What you are allowed to cook?
The qualification of what isn't baser, right? That essentially we have to define our terms. Right? That if we're going to say that there's a prohibition related to baser, so then we have to figure out what that means. Now, does the Torah use the word baser?
No.
Gedi. Right? So we're using the word baser, so it's interesting that we have to focus on that. So right away, if you're going to say there's a prohibition of basar b'chalav, there are a couple of things that have to be figured out. Now, what kind of questions are you going to have? You tell somebody that you're not allowed to cook meat and milk, so what questions come to mind? If you're going to write a code of law about that, what is going to be on your mind to try to figure out? What qualifies as meat? Okay. Okay, what quality?
It's much more simple.
Why is dairy so simple?
I was going to say, because it comes from one source, but not thinking it comes from different kinds of animals, so I don't know.
Okay, so milk's not so simple either.
Maybe it was rational to deal with seemingly being insufficient of a source, because it doesn't say anything other than you can't cook an animal in its mother's milk. Like,
right.
That, if you take the literal meaning of that, maybe you could. It could be like in its grandmother's milk, let's say, or someone not, like, no relation at all.
So why should...
It's a very limited scope, basically. So I guess my question would be, I guess if I just saw this, would be like, so where is the source for Basar B'chalav, like, other than that?
But that's interesting itself, right? Maybe it should be limited. Or one question I might have is, what is the Torah trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Right, is the Torah trying to tell me something? When the Torah says, literally, don't boil a kid, right, however you want to translate gedi, in its mother's milk, right, what kind of questions might I have from that sentence? Just reading a pasuk straight.
Does it apply to other animals also? What about chaya? What about oof?
Okay, so what kind of animals does it apply to? Yeah. What other kind of questions might pop up? Well, similarly, let's say, to what Levi was saying, right? That you're asking essentially, how do I know that it applies to other things?
So you say,
does it apply to other things? Right? Is the Torah saying something specifically about an animal and its mother? Or is that just an emphasis?
Or is the emphasis that the relationship between the animal and its mother, or is it the meat in the milk is the question, I guess.
Okay, right, exactly, right? So that's a very good way to put it. Is the Torah prohibiting meat and milk? Or is the Torah prohibiting an animal and its mother? And its mother's milk? And meat and milk is a derivative of that, essentially. Now, we know from living an observant life, right, that we know that, practically speaking, we're not allowed to mix meat and milk, regardless of which animals it came from, and I say regardless meaning whether they're related or not, whether they're a mother and child or not. I don't mean regardless of what type of animal. But it's a fair question. Is the Torah specifically saying something about the mother-child relationship and just practically we extend it to other things? Or, no, the Torah doesn't really mean to identify a mother and child here. Torah means to say, don't have meat and milk. And for whatever reason, it expresses itself in the language of a mother and child. And that's something to think about. So, we have a lot of questions as to what we mean by Gedi. And having translated that into Basar, what's included in Basar? Maury?
I don't know how much focus we're putting on into answering the questions now, but if Menachai is added as a... Did we see anything that are... like any kind of relationship between Yisrael Yisrael Menachai or Chayav Ima?
What do you think?
That's trash, because Yisrael Menachai is... I mean, if it's considered to be humane, and at least that it's given to it's one of the mitzvahs ben Noach,
mm-hmm.
then I mean, I feel like that just might be an indication, if we're drawing a connection. I'm not sure why I thought there was a connection, but if we're drawing a connection, then that might just be indicative of it being more about the relationship and less about the mixture of meat and milk, which don't seem to inherently be that, like because of an ethical reason.
Alright, let me just try to clarify what I think you're getting at. Okay, so what I think what Maury's trying to ask is, and we'll segue from that into related things, what Maury's trying to ask is there a tam here in this mitzvah that is similar to other mitzvos? And can we understand, therefore, something about its implications? And when you want to ask if there's a relationship, do you mean thematically is there a relationship, or do we find that the parameters relate? Because the parameters are definitely different, because Evre Menachai is something that's relevant to all of humanity, which I think you were mentioning. And Bas B'Chalav for sure isn't. But might there be some kind of thematic relationship? So the question of what the Torah is getting at when it mentions the mother, and what is really included, all of this is probably connected to something about the nature of the mitzvah. And the halachos are probably also affected by how we understand the nature of this mitzvah. And that's something which, as you can imagine, among the Rishonim and others, there is a lot of speculation about. And the fact that the Mishnah feels that the priorities are to figure out what is Basar, and again, not because the Torah uses that word, but because that's how we're going to relate to it, so we need to figure out what kind of Basar are we talking about. And Basar... it's also interesting because, you know, in English and in Hebrew. So we talk about basar in a certain way, meaning meat and meaning a certain kind of food, having a certain level of importance and significance. So whether any animal qualifies to be called basar in terms of its food, is fish called basar? Is chicken really called basar? Is a grasshopper called basar? Both in terms of usage and parlance, and in terms of halacha, is a little bit of a subtext here, as we'll see. But, you know, what goes to the nature of the Isser, that's a part of what the Mishnah is talking about. So what exactly is this Isser about? What does it apply to? And also focusing on Bishul, like we mentioned, is also going to be an important detail. So right away, what is our Mishnah concerned about? It says, what is the Isser of Basar B'Chalav inclusive of? And it phrases its focus on Bishul. So that's going to allow us to zero in a couple of details. Right? What is the Torah really addressing when it says, don't mix smoke and meat? What's it really talking about? And what is the mixing really about? Is it about cooking it together? Is it about eating it together? Etc., etc. And, like alluded to before, the presence of gezeros in this sugya is not incidental, and I'm going to want to spend some time on that. The idea of gezeros chazal as a topic in this brief amud over here is important, because the relationship between dinim d'oraisa and dinim d'rabbanan is always a fascinating topic, but it's very much part of the fabric of this Mishnah and a part of what helps us to understand any din of the Torah. So what's going to emerge, I don't think I actually asked you yet to look at the Gemara here, I asked to look at the Gemara elsewhere, but what you'll see, maybe tomorrow, maybe look over here, what's going to emerge from the Gemara right after the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is talking both on a level Minat Torah and a level Midrabbanan. So this Mishnah addressing the fact that we have different animals and we theoretically could be eating different animals, even just among the animals that are kosher. So we could be eating behemos and chayos, we could be eating birds, and we could be eating grasshoppers, theoretically. And all of them, you could ask, could they be mixed with milk? And what we'll find, and it's going to depend which Tana, which opinion you're subscribing to, there are different views, but we'll find in some cases there's an Isser Minat Torah to combine them. In some cases, there's no Isser at all to combine them. And in some cases, there's an Isser Midrabbanan to combine them. So it's also reflective to try to understand why did Chazal sometimes think that, okay, this is not a part of the Torah's prohibition, this is not necessarily a part of what the Torah was addressing, but for whatever reason, the rabbis felt that it's important to include this in the practical prohibition. And why this yes, and why that no? So why, for example, would the rabbis say that chicken is not a part of what the Torah had in mind, but nonetheless, we're going to prohibit having chicken and milk? But fish, we're not going to prohibit having fish and milk. What did Chazal have in mind when they imposed the Gzera, and how does that relate to their understanding of what the Isser is in the first place? So these are important questions, and this is essentially addressed in the Mishnah. As the Gemara, you'll get to get a chance to see, as the Gemara essentially is addressing. Okay, so far so good. So, what do you think? We have a few minutes today with a short schedule, and I guess we'll see also how tomorrow plays out. But let's try to speculate a little bit, like some of the Rishonim did. I didn't put all these Rishonim on the list. I just put, I could give you more to look at, but it would take a long time. I'm happy to give you more specifics. If you were to speculate about Tamei HaMitzvos, why is there a prohibition of Basar B'Chalav? Neither one has a hand. So Levi has a handful. Yes. Okay. Sorry.
Just
yeah.
The king may be Klayim.
Okay. Interesting. So you were to say that?
The answer why?
Okay.
That's a category.
Well, this is like a very terse debate. Okay. Essentially, so this is like an auction debate where we're holding up a card and cutting each other off. So basically, what Levi started to say. Which the Sefer HaChinuch says, you should know, so you should get credit for that, is that maybe there's something inherently contradictory in these two substances. That we know that the Torah sometimes says there are things that don't mix, and maybe meat and milk are like that. Now, Meir is like, oh, well, that's all very well and good, but it doesn't explain anything. And that's just kind of reframing the question, because I don't know why kilayim are prohibited. I don't know why I can't mix wool and linen. So by saying that it's like wool and linen, you haven't really answered the question. Now, the truth is, and because our time is limited now, and we'll probably have to have this conversation in greater depth tomorrow, so let's put that in context. So first of all, clearly, basar b'chalav, if you were to ask the average person on the street, is basar b'chalav a chok or a mishpat? So they would say to you, what's basar b'chalav? But if you would ask the person who knows what Basar B'Chalav is and knows what Chuk Mishpatim are, they'd probably say, I don't have to have a reason for Basar B'Chalav, it's a chok. This is your classic ritual kind of mitzvah. And there's no question that we're not going to come up conclusively with a absolute reason. And when it came to Shechita for the first parak in our first part of the year, we had an easier time assuming that even though Shechita is also a ritual mitzvah and Shechita has all kinds of details and we don't expect non-Jews to observe the laws of Shechita and Shechita is a particularly religious mitzvah, but we still felt more comfortable assuming that Shechita we probably understood. That Shechita very likely was about finding the most painless way to kill an animal. And that even all of the Yoredeya kind of dinim that are associated with it probably clustered around that kind of understanding. When it comes to Basar B'Chalav, it's clearly different. It's definitely more chok-ish. But that's somewhat of a spectrum. So it's probably more inaccessible than Shechita is. But maybe not totally. And tomorrow we'll discuss more the range of opinions that are out there. But at the end of the day, and some of them say this explicitly, like the Chinuch and others, that we can offer some theories. But at the end of the day, it seems like this is a chok more than other things. And that this probably is more in the Parah Aduma category than it is in the Lo Sigzol category, for sure. Or even in the Shabbos and Yontif category, or maybe even in the Shechita category. Right, if you were to categorize Basar B'Chalav with, if I asked you, does Basar B'Chalav fit better with Parah Aduma or with Lo Sigzol? So, you'd say Parah Aduma? Okay. If I'd say, does it fit with Parah Aduma or with Shechita? What would you say? So, okay, so that's an interesting question, right? So that's part of what we have to explore tomorrow. So, Shechita, which is a little bit more accessible to us to understand what we think we're pretty confident it's about, so does Basar B'Chalav have elements of that? And if so, can that explain why certain aspects are closer to what the Yisra is really about, and others are more of a gezeira? maybe Gzeira min HaTorah, maybe Gzeira min Rabbanan. Right, it might be that there are parts of the Isser the Oraisa that are not fundamental, but are just part of the way this phrase, the Isser exists. And we're going to have to consider the important complex question of how does Bishul relate to Achila? And there's also within that the question of how does Achila relate to Hana? Right, so a lot of important questions, some of which will more immediately get some kind of clarity on, some of which will impact the whole sugya. Unfortunately, the time was very short today, so we didn't get to dip in too deeply. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have a little more time. Everybody clear on everything that we did so far today? Any immediate issues? All right, so hopefully tomorrow you'll have time to at least hopefully say that they get a little further in the list. I also should see this first Gemara just to give a little bit of context to that. And hopefully we will be able to bring more clarity to it tomorrow as well. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. You should stay warm. You should stay safe. And should be only good things. All right.